I'm Lisa Davis. Welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM. Studies show that life expectancy has increased 30 years in the past century. New discoveries indicate that healthy aging is not only determined by one's genes. A lifestyle geared towards increasing longevity can dramatically affect our function and quality of life in later years. And the best news of all is it is never too late to change habits. Joining us today to share his longevity prescription is Robert N. Butler, MD, physician, gerontologist, psychiatrist, public servant, and Pulitzer Prize-winning author. Dr. Robert N. Butler has long been involved in a broad array of social and health issues, perhaps best known for his advocacy of the medical and social needs and rights of older people and his research on healthy aging and dementias. He was founding director of the National Institute on Aging at the NIH. Today we will be talking about his wonderful new book, Longevity Prescription, The 8 Proven Keys to a Long, Healthy Life. The longevity prescription makes it possible for readers at any age to delay or deter chronic diseases such as heart disease and diabetes altogether, keep the aging body vital and active, ensure whole life happiness, and much more. Dr. Butler, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on WUML 91.5 FM.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Wonderful. It's a beautiful day in New York.
Oh, yes, it's a beautiful day in Boston as well. And, you know, your book was so wonderful. And I love how you asked some really great questions in the introduction. How important is genetic inheritance? What is the answer to that, Dr. Butler?
The answer is that only about 25%. You know, we all think we'll live as long as our parents, but many times we outdistance them, and then there are other times when, for failure to behave properly, they outdistance us. The real truth is that 75% of it is up to us. That's a powerful piece of information.
It really
is. Our
lifestyle
and our environment contributes more to our longevity than our genes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. You know, and in the introduction, too, you tell the readers about Frank. Can you share a little bit about him?
About Frank?
Yes.
God, now I've got so many names in the book, I'm not sure I remember which one. What did he do?
Frank is the one who had lived really simply. He lived on a farm. He ate
good food.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think anyone who's lucky enough to grow up on a farm and to eat modestly and to have low-calorie intake is more likely, particularly if they've been physically active, which people on farms are, to live longer.
Yeah.
And better.
Yeah, that's true. You know, what's so great about the book is you cover so many different areas. You cover mental vitality and nurturing relationships and getting a better night's sleep and reducing stress. And I'd love to talk about maintaining mental vitality. You write about strategies for mental vitality, which are cognitive calisthenics, reconfiguring your brain, and improving your lifestyle choices. Can you tell us a little bit about each
one? Sure. If I had to distill it down, it's really three major things. The Romans knew 2,000 years ago that a sound mind and a sound body, and we know actually from modern technology, from MRIs, that with physical exercise, more blood goes to the brain. So physical exercise is one conduit to good cognitive vitality or brain health. Number two is intellectual stimulation. And here I like it to be challenging, not just crossword puzzles, but something like learning a new language, deciding to take up a musical instrument you always wanted to play, or joining a book club and having serious discussions about books. And the third thing is social interaction. I mean, it just is very important to have human connection, to have contact with each other, I think especially across the generations. And that all helps keep your brain healthy and active.
Yeah, I agree. And you have some tips in the book for people who, you know, on making friendships and nurturing relationships. If you can share some of your advice with the listeners.
Well, you know, one of the things that we found in studies way back in the 60s that we did when I was at the National Institutes of Health is that if people have something to get up for in the morning, a passion, a purpose in life, they actually live longer. Well, here's an opportunity for us to serve society as well as ourselves. If we can give to others through something purposive, even if we're retired or if we're a kid, if we can work in a human rights clinic or work in taking care of children or whatever, at any age, these are all valuable efforts to not only help others but to help yourself. It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, it really is. You know, even for people who are like animal lovers, for example, you know, we got our dogs from the pound about 10 years ago, and they need people to go in and walk dogs. And, if you know, there's so many different volunteer avenues that you can explore, and you would meet people through that. But that's just one of the things that, you know, I'm a big dog person, so
well,
that I thought of. But there's so many things that you can do. And one of the things you talk about in the book as well is stress. Now, having a supportive community and friends is definitely going to help lessen your stress. And what are some
or even
other...
having a little red poodle like I have. That can reduce
stress.
You want a red
stress. Poodle?
A red poodle. Can you believe it? She's beautiful.
Oh, my
God.
But
anyway, you're right. Stress is very important. What
yes.
comes to mind is, last year, the Nobel Prize was won by a wonderful woman named Elizabeth Blackburn at the University of California, San Francisco. And she had done a study which was independent of the Nobel Prize with a psychologist in which they took two groups of women. One group had children with chronic illness. The other group had healthy women. She, Elizabeth Blackburn, had developed a means of measuring what is called a marker of aging. I won't go into all the scientific details, but the point is that those mothers who had chronically ill children were already aging faster by her measurement than the others who did not have the chronically ill children.
Mm-hmm.
Stress, in other words, can really be a killer.
Yeah.
And I personally like to take an hour a day somewhere in peace and quiet. Maybe I walk over to the park. Maybe I just sit somewhere, meditate, think about things. But I try not to think about anything that I'm doing at work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people might be Tai Chi, yoga, whatever. But I think we owe it to ourselves in this incredibly stressful world. Multiple tasking, all of our instruments of speed, our cell phones, our computers. We need a little peace.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, I worry about that, too. And, you know, it's interesting you actually talk in the book about, you know, all the social networking going on and then
yes.
the cyber, you know, which actually I think can be good and bad. You know, I've met a lot of amazing people through Facebook and got people really interested in the radio show, and it's been wonderful. But then at the same time, you can just get so sucked into it as well.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think one of the reasons we have such a serious problem for our children, I mean, it's sickening to me as a doctor to see 10-year-old kids who are obese and have old-age diabetes. But
yeah.
think of the amount of time kids now spend at the computer, sitting in front of their TV sets, and not actually being physically active.
It's true. Yeah, we really need to do something to get kids out there. And, you know, and again, you talk about starting really young. I mean, you can start feeling good at a young age and keep it going throughout your life. You know, for example, my daughter's 5 and she eats a whole food diet and gets good exercise. And
good for her.
You know, she
good for you for having
yeah.
that happen.
You know, you know, I have a kind of a funny story where I thought, geez, maybe I took this a little too far. I'm always talking to her about, you know, how horrible smoking is. And I also, you know, you've been saying you shouldn't eat junk food. So I said, remember, when you're older, if a big kid offers you a cigarette, what are you going to say? She said, I'm going to say no. And if they offer me a bowl of ice cream, I'm going to say no to that too. And I thought, geez, I had gone a little too far. But at any rate, I would rather, but she'll say, well, this is my body and I want to take good care of it. And it really helps to get them started when they're young and then carry it throughout your life.
You know what I would love to see
yeah.
happen?
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to have lunch hour in our public schools be a teaching hour. Where
that
the
would
kids
be great.
Are taught about fruits and vegetables and not just said hamburgers and hot dogs and pizza.
Yeah.
I don't mean that they should never have a hot dog or pizza or a hamburger. I'm just saying it cannot be the regular diet. They've got to eat string beans and carrots, and they've got to have appropriate healthy foods.
Yeah,
and they've
true.
Got to be taught why, so they don't feel mystified as to why this stuff is being pushed on them when they'd really rather eat French fries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, if you didn't start as a child, I mean, that's a good thing with your book, too. It's never too late to start. I mean, you have a whole section on nutrition and managing your diet with all kinds of great suggestions. So, you know, that's the thing. Like, you don't – some people might say, well, I've been eating cruddy all my life. Why change now? But, you know, what's it going to do? But it really – you can turn it around. I mean, and, you know, exercise, too. There's been studies with people in their 70s who start lifting weights, and it makes a huge difference.
And especially to the – thigh muscles, because as you probably know, the number 12 cause of death in people over 65 is a fall. So if you have good, strong thigh muscles because you've been doing squats every day, sitting in a chair with no arms and sitting up 15 times, pausing, do it another 15 times every day, you're going to have stronger thighs and you're going to have a less chance of a fall. And there's nothing more heartbreaking than someone that's been vigorous and healthy and suddenly they wind up with a broken hip or worse.
Yeah, that's true. You know, a neighbor of mine last year, she'd fallen. I don't know if she broke her hip, but she died a short time later, and I was just shocked because she always seemed so active, and I just, you know, things can happen, though, really quickly. Now, when did you first start getting interested in health? And as a child, were you taught to eat healthy, or did that come later in life?
Before I get to that, let me say
that
the figures are that up to 40% of people that have a broken hip are dead before the year is over. Now, how did I get interested? Well, I grew up poor, which is probably good because we didn't have a lot of bad food.
Mm-hmm.
We ate lots of, I was on a little farm, and we ate lots of fruits and vegetables. I had occasional fish. I had rare meat. I had a lot of soaked navy beans, which overnight would soak, and we'd eat them. But it was a very happy childhood. I don't want to make it sound awful.
Mm-hmm.
But I got very interested in food. I was never overweight. And I've tried to stay that way. And so that was part of my interest in health. And then there was this wonderful Dr. Rose. And I saw what he did. And we used to give him fruits and vegetables and chicken when he took care of us medically because I couldn't afford to pay him. And so I decided I was going to be like Dr. Rose. So 7 years of age, I decided I was going to be a doctor.
Oh, that's so neat.
And so I never had to go through an identity crisis, right? I mean,
yeah.
I knew exactly where I was going all along.
Oh, that's a great feeling.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Now, if you know, how old are you now, if you don't mind me asking?
83 young. 83 years old.
Wow. That's awesome. You sound fabulous.
Well, I am. I hope.
I'm sure
I'm
you
still
are.
Working, and I think I probably put in about a 60-hour work week.
Oh, my
goodness. I'm not suffering doing it. I like
okay,
what I do.
Okay, I was about to say, that's a lot of work for anybody.
No, I'm not suffering. You know, I write books. I think
mm-hmm.
about stuff. I run a policy center. I talk to people about medical issues, et cetera.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about your center.
Well, we want to address the huge challenges that this increase in the aging population around the world brings about. So we have centers, for example, in developing nations like at the University of Cape Town in South Africa, in Argentina, in India, and then in the developed world in Japan, France, Great Britain, the Netherlands, Israel, Czech Republic, Singapore. And we all learn from each other, and that's the point. We want to learn how to deal with the economic consequences of population aging. How do we finance longevity? So people don't wind up starving. And how do we maintain health? If you're going to live that long, you want to be healthy.
Okay.
So those are our two main objectives.
You know, something that I really thought was interesting in the book as well is, you know, when you talk about obviously staying active being so important, and then you have something called boomeritis. What is boomeritis?
Well, I change my definition all the time. But
okay.
Boomers, of course, are 76 yeah. million strong, born between 1946 and 1964.
Mm-hmm.
And the oldest is now getting well into the 60s. I think next year will be the first time that they can get a Medicare coverage.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they don't have any money. In truth, even before this economic turmoil, only half had 401ks, and they only had on average about $40,000 in them. So the boomers don't have a lot of money, and they have not been as healthy as we like to think. We always think of the boomers as physically active, running, marathoning, et cetera. But take the country as a whole, all 76 million baby boomers in Arkansas, Minnesota, Alabama, they are the reason we're the heaviest nation in the world is the baby boomers.
Oh, I didn't know.
We've got a lot of wrong impressions about the boomers. So I worry about the boomers a lot because overnight they're going to make up one out of every five Americans, 20% of the population. How are they going to finance themselves? What's going to happen as their health falters? How can we avoid the kinds of problems that the boomers are likely to face?
Geez. And the boomer itis, the itis has to do with the aches and pains and problems that they're having, right, from not taking care of themselves.
Or sometimes if they've overcared for themselves.
Oh, that's true.
Well, what I mean, what I mean is, you know, the real truth is that probably the safest and least consequential exercise is walking.
That's mine.
Running, running, you'll get knee troubles. But with walking, you're usually not apt to. And yet you get basically the same positive effect. I have a walking group. That's a lot of fun. I have,
oh, that's great.
We have eight of us, and four women, four men. We're all from different fields. We have a lot to talk about. We can walk 5 or 6 miles, and then we can have a nice breakfast. So I really think we don't have to belong to excessive health clubs. We could get Americans on the march. We get families to walk together, husbands and wives to walk together, children and parents, neighborhoods. On an inexpensive means, we could do a lot to both add to quality of life and reduce health costs in this country.
Yeah, that's, you know, I love having, again, back to dogs, because you have to walk them.
Yeah.
You know, even if I don't feel like walking, my dogs will follow me around the house whining until I do.
Yeah, you have no choice.
And so that's, you know, that's a really good thing. But I just want to thank you so much, Dr. Butler. There, you are so inspirational, and your wonderful book, Longevity Prescription, The 8 Proven Keys to a Long, Healthy Life, is a must-have. It's, again, it's just fantastic. And how can people learn more about you and the work that you do?
Well, I have a website, which is, I'm a nonprofit. I'm not a profit organization. It's www.ilcusa, which means International Longevity Center, United States of America, .org. Org means nonprofit. And by the way, the book is nonprofit. I decided if there are any profits, they'd all go back to the center, not to me.
Oh,
so
wow.
I think that's something I wanted to do because I love what I do, and I think what we're trying to accomplish is important. But we're a nonprofit organization.
All right. Well, it sure is important. I am so glad you were able to come on today. Now, if people want to reach me, they can go to itsyourhealthradio.org. I hope everyone has a great week. Keep being healthy. Get out there and go for a walk and do some volunteer work and make some new friends. Take care. Bye-bye.